Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, that Magic game didn't go exactly how we planned it or how we thought it was going to go. I know it was going to be kind of an uphill battle with four of the Magic's players, guys that are taking up, you know, crucial minutes for the Magic, ended up not playing last night. But even after that, the Bulls found themselves winning at the last second. What did you think about that Magic game and that result overall, Matt?
I want those 2 hours of my life back, Jordan. Oh, my God. Well, I mean, the Bulls, they almost pulled off another one. They blew an 18-point lead. An 18-point lead in the fourth quarter, and you're just like, yes, this is going to be another great tank win, especially over Orlando, a team that they had already beaten twice and a team that they're chasing to the bottom right now. And, I mean, you talk about a battle of who could have the more inefficient offensive basketball team in the last 6 minutes of a game. And the Magic outdid the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls offensively were horrendous down the stretch of that game, and Orlando was even worse. I mean, that inbounds play where LaVine basically just steals it and gets a free pass to a dunk for what ended up being the go-ahead points and the deciding factor in that game, you're thinking, my God, like the Magic really have this tanking thing figured out, because they almost came back to win that game, and the Magic snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, which is what the Bulls should have done in that game. I mean, you and I talked in yesterday's episode about how much fun it was to be at the UC for a win over Minnesota, a very good team, a playoff-bound team, and of course the added element of, you know, emotions at stake with the return of Tibbs and Taj and Jimmy. Obviously, a win like that in dramatic fashion, you don't mind that it goes against the grain as far as what you're trying to accomplish, getting these ping pong balls. But beating Orlando again in a game that was, I mean, it was 48 minutes of horrendous, ugly basketball. So yeah, I want those 2 hours of my
life.
Well,
I just watching this game, I felt like not only did the Bulls have the 18-point lead, so I was kind of sitting there like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to come to the terms that the Bulls are probably going to pull this one out, especially with all the players that were missing, Aaron Gordon being one of the most crucial of them. But, I mean, you let Mario Hezonja drop 24 on you. You let Evan Fournier drop another 22, and you let them scrape and claw all the way back from an 18-point lead, and then you just rip the tank heart. The people that are cheering for the tank to go on, you rip the hearts out of all of them. But I do have to, I can't sit here and be mad about the play that Zach LaVine made at the end of the game too, at that inbounds play. Like, that's exactly what I want him to do at end of games, be aggressive and go for it. But at the same time, it's like, wow, this could be a game we look back maybe in May or June when we finally figure out where the Bulls will pick. And if they end up between 7 and 10, this is like one of those games that you'll look back and say, man, I really wish the Bulls would have lost this one. Because like, I can't imagine that once Chris Dunn gets back, that this team's going to get any worse, especially when, my other question, especially when you've got guys like Justin Holiday and Jerian Grant playing 37 and 35 minutes, Zach LaVine putting in 33 minutes against this Orlando Magic team. I guess I just don't understand it, and there are a lot of layers to it, but I just don't understand why guys like this are getting, you know, 35 to 40 minutes a night in a situation where the young guys should be playing more.
Yeah, we keep hearing that, and we heard it from Paxton, and we heard it from Fred at the deadline. Part of the plan is we're going to see more minutes for these guys, the young guys, because that's part of this season is player evaluation, and they need to see how guys fit, if they fit at all, in their plans moving forward. And it is a shame that we only really got a few games right when LaVine came back where you had LaVine, Markkanen, and Dunn on the floor together, because those are the three pieces you're trying to build around. And then you had Dunn's concussion. Hoiberg was talking at this morning's shoot-around about how, you know, he's back at practice and he's finally out of concussion protocol and he might get some action in their game against Toronto tomorrow, which is the Bulls' last game before the All-Star break. And you wonder, like, why not just hold him out one more game? I think the Bulls are probably going to lose to Toronto tomorrow night, regardless of who's out there on the floor. Toronto's a much better team. But just let Chris Dunn take another one off. And then you got the All-Star break. And then after the All-Star break is when we keep hearing that guys like Felicio and Zipser and Campaign are going to get more minutes. Campaign, it's going to be his first minutes of the season. To me, this is a no-brainer. Look, you know, Paxson can avoid talking about tanking all he wants. Fred Hoiberg can avoid talking about tanking all he wants. He did it at this morning shoot-around again when Casey Johnson asked him about the fans' negative reaction to a win like last night's win that's detrimental to what the plan is. And Hoiberg, I mean, you can't fault him for saying, look, we're going to try to go out there and win games, and we're going to try to win close games. And, you know, as you said, Jordan, you know, one of the key pieces, like LaVine making a big play at the end to win that game. Like, you can't fault him for that. But at the same time, they've done enough damage towards getting that top tier lottery pick, and they still have enough time. They've played 56 games. They still have enough time to lose out. I mean, really, like they're eighth right now. They're slotted eighth. The Knicks are creeping up right behind them. They've dropped 7 in a row. Charlotte's dropped 4 in a row. They're only a few behind Chicago, and everybody else. I mean, they're chasing Brooklyn and Memphis right now. Those teams have both lost 6 in a row. Like, go. Give Campaign those minutes that you're talking about. Give Felicio those minutes. Give Zipser those minutes. And use the excuse of, we're evaluating player talent. Because right now, I mean, if they have more wins like this against tanking teams, like their win against Orlando last night, they're going to be kicking themselves when they don't get lucky in the draft like they did in 2008 with Rose. And instead of picking in the top three or even the top five, they're picking 9th or 10th. That is not what this season was supposed to be about.
Look, and I get it. I get it from the player's standpoint. I get it from Fred Hoiberg's standpoint. They're obviously, like you had said, they're not going to go out there and lose games. Players aren't there to lose games. And one of the arguments I feel like for everybody that there's that small group of Bulls fan bases in this Bulls fan base that doesn't want to see this team lose, doesn't want to see this team tank. I understand that. But at the same time, you can't possibly think that, you know, with your argument of growing the culture and losing is counterintuitive for young guys. I mean, at some point, you got to realize that most of these guys aren't going to be on this roster when the Bulls are competitive again. And you've got the three guys, I would even maybe toss four or five guys out there playing the legit minutes that you want them to play to grow and develop those guys. Guys like Lauri Markkanen, Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine. You could throw Bobby Portis's name in there, and you could throw Denzel Valentine's name in there too as well. But I've seen what Robin Lopez can do. I've seen what Justin Holiday can do. I've seen what Jerian Grant can do. Like, I'm okay if Fred steps aside and says, you know what, I'm going to try to find a way to integrate Paul Zipser into the lineup, Ryan Arcidiacono, Cam Payne, Noah Vonleh, Cristiano Felicio, these guys need to be, they at some point the Bulls need to see what they have in these guys, and by letting them play 10, 12, 14, 15 minutes a night, it's, I don't think it's going to help figure out what you have in those guys. Not saying that like all of a sudden you're going to bank on these guys being a part of the competitive nature that the Bulls are going to be in 2, 3, 4 years from now, but it puts Fred Hoiberg in a tough spot. And I don't know how you feel about this, but do you think at this point in the season, all the good things that Fred has done so far, that he would feel as though he doesn't have to prove anything right now? Like, you've proven that you can get guys to buy in, that you can get teams to work hard, that your offensive sets are working. So why does he feel, I think, to have to send Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, Jerian Grant, et cetera, out there for crucial minutes in a night where you could use a loss rather than a win?
Exactly. And Felicio was a DNP last night. Explain to me why that is. I guess you still want to get Cam Payne some run with the Windy City Bulls before you bring him back into the fold. Fine. Hurry that up. He's had a couple of games with the Windy City Bulls. He's looked decent enough. Whatever. Bring him up. Throw him in there. Noah Vonleh, you made that trade because you wanted to get a look at a young 22-year-old prospect. Fine. Throw him in there. Like, why? Why were they both DNPs last night? I do not get it. And as far as your point about Hoiberg feeling like he needs to prove himself, I think I'm with you. Like, we've seen Hoiberg have stretches of success this season, getting his team to play the way that we have always wondered whether or not Hoiberg was capable of coaching, because they never played his system. We've seen at least glimpses of that. So we know with the key pieces that they're trying to build around that they can start that process again next season and hopefully pick up where they left off as far as who's still here and who is being coached by Fred Hoiberg for another successive season. At this point, if you didn't want to trade Grant or I'm sorry, if you didn't want to trade Lopez and or Holiday because you didn't want to take any multi-year bad deals and whatever was coming with those wasn't enticing enough of an offer, and you also value their veteran leadership so much that you didn't want to compromise that and let them go for a deal you didn't love, fine, I get that logic. But that does not mean you need to be playing them all of these minutes. They can be veteran leaders that are coming off the bench and playing fewer minutes, while guys who are younger, who you are supposed to be evaluating if what Paxson is saying to us is true, and that's what he really wants to be doing, they can be the veterans in the locker room. They can be veterans and leaders in practice. But let the kids play. Let the kids play and try to get yourself back towards the top of that lottery list. Because Paxson and Fred can deny it all they want. But that was the plan. That was the plan when you traded Jimmy. You get the three pieces that you're excited about, and you add another one at the top of the draft. And I mean, if they continue to give these veterans minutes who aren't a real part of the rebuild moving forward, instead of getting an evaluation of the young kids and hopefully along with that piling up some more losses, all they're doing is a disservice to themselves.
Yeah, and I don't think either of us are saying that Cristiano Felicio should be starting over Robin Lopez, or that Archie Diacono should be out there in some type of rotation with Jerry and Greg. Like, we're not.
I am. Start Felicio. Why the hell not?
See, you can't do that. Like, obviously, Fred Hoiberg would never do that. He would never do that. And, like, same thing with
Fred Hoiberg's not the boss. John Paxson is the freaking boss.
Now that you're saying that.
So you're telling me John Paxson can't come to Fred and say, look, I know that you're trying to get some wins for these young kids. We're trying to build a winning culture. But do us a favor. After the All-Star break, start Felicio.
Nah.
Bring Lopez off the bench.
See, I don't like when the front office starts sticking their hands in coaching decisions. Like, I understand, like, you can guide and you can bring up suggestions, but let's be honest, I don't like the idea. I'm in the boat of let your coach do what he is good at. Don't start sticking your fingers in places they shouldn't be, in rotations, in what players. Obviously, you can say you need to give Cam Payne more run. You got to give Paul Zipser more run, Cristiano Felicio, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, Fred Hoiberg's not going to turn around and be like, all right, I'm going to send Archie Diacono, Cristiano Felicio out there. Paul Zipser, you're starting tonight. Zach LaVine, sorry, you're on a minutes restriction. You're going to be only playing 22, 25 minutes a game. Chris Dunn, you know, you can go out there with those guys too. Like, that's not going to happen. And, like, I don't know about you, but I hate the feeling of John Paxson and Gar Forman getting in Fred Hoiberg's ear just because of all the good things that Fred Hoiberg has done with this team. And as far as the X and O's go in his offensive sets and being able to turn this team into a pace and space type of team, and we've seen that, I don't like the idea that all of a sudden now, and this is where things got kind of weird with Tom Thibodeau, when Gar Pax was asking him about minutes and players that he should be playing and lightening the load, like asking him to do things that the coach should be worrying about, not the front office.
But you're comparing apples and oranges, Jordan, because that was them worrying about how many minutes Tibbs was, you know, giving to his guys and riding them too hard.
But it's still putting a hand into the coaches' decisions.
But okay, but why did they kick Tom Thibodeau out of town? Because they, and this is something that, you know, the front office said, is something that even Jerry Reinsdorf wrote in his scathing dismissal of Tom Thibodeau. It was a lack of communication. It was the fact that Tom Thibodeau was trying to be a coach and a controlling coach, and he wanted a hands-off front office that wasn't poking their heads around practice and telling him how to do his job. And Tibbs is a, you know, rough around the edges guy who didn't like that. And they said, yeah, okay, for Hoiberg, it's all about, you know, we're preaching this new up-tempo, modern style of NBA offense, and that was one of the big selling points. But the other selling point is that Fred was their guy, and a guy who would restore those great, you know, multi-directional streamlined layers of communication within the organization and all that other BS that they rattled off. So if you actually believe that that's true, and that Hoiberg's communication and relationship is much stronger with Gar and Paxson than it was with Tom Thibodeau, then what's the problem with them coming to their coach, who they have great communication with, and saying, hey, here's the plan for March. Here's the plan for after the All-Star break. These are the guys you're going to play. These are the minutes that are going to be played. What, I'm sorry, but I do not understand why that is not possible if they were preaching about the great relationships and the communication skills between these three guys.
No, and look,
what's the problem?
And look,
there?
I'm not saying that there's a problem with Gar Pax telling or asking Fred to do certain things, but at the same time, you can't, as Fred Hoiberg as the coach, you can't just make it imminent to your players in that locker room that instead of Holiday getting the starter, instead of Robin Lopez getting the start, you're going to send Felicio out there and have him play big time. And it's like, I get it. From a fan standpoint, you can see it and you want these guys to be out there. But at the same time, you got to think of it from Fred Hoiberg's standpoint and from the guys in that locker room. Like, I feel like there's a dynamic changing when you're specifically going to try and lose games, like from the players and from the coach's perspective. I understand it from the fan side of view, and I understand it from the GM side of the view. And like you said, I think that's a clear and evident point and a complete difference between Tom Thibodeau and Fred Hoiberg. There's a bigger and a better line of communication. And I just hope that things don't get to the point where, like, Fred Hoiberg, this is a first year he's really been able to sink his teeth in and do exactly what he wants to do with players that he wants to do it with. And to just kind of be, I get it from the standpoint, too, of the lottery is huge this year. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't go out there and run these guys for more minutes. But at the same time, you got to look at it from Fred Hoiberg's standpoint and the player's standpoint as well. And, like, if I'm Fred Hoiberg, and I'm not confident in myself in that I don't need to prove anything this year, this is kind of why he's running these guys out there at 35, 40 minutes a night. So, like, I'm kind of on the edge. Like, I see it from all perspectives, and I don't know where the Bulls can go from this. But I'm just, I'll say it again, I'm not a huge fan of the front office getting involved in coaching and everyday decisions that are happening on the floor. I'm just not a big fan of it.
Well, for a Bulls fan base that is so frustrated with the front office, and we're finally, in the past year or so, seeing moves made by them that at least make some sense and that we can get behind, and people are sort of starting to say, eh, maybe we didn't lose that Butler trade. Things are actually looking pretty, you know, pretty okay. If there is still that ingrained sense of we're so judgmental of the Bulls front office, if they have an opportunity to do something proactive, to go to their coach and say, here's the plan moving forward. And again, look, you said we'll put yourself in Fred Hoiberg's shoes. That's got to be rough. Essentially saying, all right, well, the plan after the All-Star break is to lose as many games as possible. I get that. But it's all under the guise of player evaluation and player development. So they have that excuse in their pocket. Look, we're not giving Felicio and Campaign and Zipser and Vonleh all these minutes and taking minutes away from guys like Holiday and Lopez because we're trying to tank. No, we're evaluating our young talent. That's all it is. That is the only reason they need, and it's the reason they have.
I'm with you. I'm sitting here telling you that I'm with you, that it just gets tough when this team's in a different spot than some other tanking teams where it's easier to do those types of things. Like, the Bulls have veterans on this team that can play, that are above average players, and it gets tough when you're trying to deal with those guys, and it's not as easy to, I guess, slyly put these guys in positions where you can get a look at them, and you're also not slapping Robin Lopez or Justin Holiday in the face saying, you know what? You know the situation that's here. You didn't pick being here.
Yeah, that sucks for Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, but Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday are journeymen NBA veterans who know that this is a business.
I agree with you. And so it's going to be interesting. Like, what does the front office do? What do they say to Fred Hoiberg? Does Fred Hoiberg continue along the plan?
You know what they say to Fred Hoiberg? They say, hey, Fred, coming up this spring, would you rather be picking 5th or 10th? Boom. End of conversation. Now go give Campaign 35 minutes tonight. End of story. I'm sorry. It's that simple.
I mean, I can't argue with that. I'm with you. If I was to choose, if I was Fred Hoiberg right now, I'd be sending those guys out to play 20, 25 minutes a night just at least to get a look. The one thing I want to wrap this conversation up, though, and to kind of touch on what's been going on the last 10 games or so, where has David Nwaba been? Like, why is he only playing 13, 14 minutes a night? Over the last 10 games, he's only averaging 16 minutes a night. Over these last four games, he did get a lot of run against Washington. That was more so just because Zach LaVine has been out. But even taking a look at David Nwaba, it's like, why are you playing Justin Holiday, Jerry and Grant, and Zach LaVine so many minutes when you have another guy that you want to take a look at in David Nwaba? And why is he only playing 14, 15 minutes a night? So that's another person that I could throw into that mix, too. Obviously, we both are pretty high on David Nwaba and what he's done this season. I'd like to see him get more run out there, and maybe that'll happen. Maybe Fred Hoiberg can push him into the rotation, too. But you got to get a look at him, too, as well. And, like, Bobby Portis has been getting a ton more minutes too, and I wonder if that's going to change once Noah Vonleh gets actually a run in one of these games. And I know that they said they were kind of letting him get comfortable and into the Bulls system for a few days before they stuck him out there. So I wonder how Bobby Portis's minutes are going to shift. But overall, I think we're both in agreement that the Bulls need to play these young guys. And hey, if Campaign goes out there and drops 20, if Noah Vonleh goes out there and has a night where it's 18 and 12, like, you can't fault them for that. At least, you know, it's kind of a win-win. You get the loss, and you also get your good guys. If they end up turning out and playing offense well, playing a game well, like, then you deal with it. But other than that, I think you're right. Like, between all of these guys, it's going to be difficult to try and shift minutes and figure out what you're going to do. But for Fred Hoiberg, like, the front office should just go up to him and say, dude, your job's safe. You've done well this season. This is the best year you've had in the NBA so far. So just cool the Jets with sending Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, and Jerry Grant out there for 35 minutes a night. And let's see what else we got on this roster. And hey, you know what? It can help us in June, too, by maybe being a top five pick.
So you're saying you don't have a problem with the Bulls front office going to Fred and saying, here's the plan for the rest of the season?
I don't have a problem with them saying, let's go out there and comforting him. Like, I don't have a problem with them going and telling him, you've done your job. Your job is safe, so stop pressing so hard to think that you have to prove something. But what I'm not okay with is them going, say, all right, go run Campaign out there for 25, 30 minutes a night. You got to have this player, and this player playing these many minutes for the rest. Like, I'm not okay with that. Like, telling what Fred Hoiberg should do, I think you just go and you comfort him a little bit. I think you have to, I feel like you have to baby him almost a little bit, like telling him and giving him a little bit of assurance, a little bit of confidence that he's doing the right thing here. Just cool the Jets.
Essentially, all they have to say is, well, for the remainder of the season, the plan is focused on player evaluation. I mean, that is the fancy speak, and, you know, the the specific detailed verbiage that you, if you want to use, just to make sure nobody's feathers get too rustled. But it's about player evaluation, and because of that, you're going to take all these guys on the roster that aren't getting minutes right now, and you're going to give them minutes. And Paxson and Hoiberg and Gar and Michael Reinsdorf and all of them can know that subtextually that also means giving these players a chance to be evaluated in games against teams that are trying to win games. It's probably going to result in some losses, and maybe they'll get themselves back towards the top of that lottery list. That is the end goal. And all they need to do, regardless of who's communicating with whom, it's, here's the plan, Fred. Play these guys. This is why we're playing these guys. Player evaluation. Great. Everybody on the same page? Cool. Let's go get a 10-game losing streak. It's that simple.
Yeah, and I'm not ready to freak out like some, maybe some other people are, too, because, like, realistically, the Bulls are only 3 games back from the worst record in the league. There are, like you had brought up, there are teams that have had terrible streaks already, and the Bulls kind of sit in that position where they're still hanging around between 1 and 7, but you got to make it a little bit more clear that they're going to be in that hunt. And this would have been a game against Orlando that would have been nice. And, like, obviously, I feel like the outcome would have been different had all four of the players that they sat out had played. It might have been a little bit different. But like you said, I don't think I'm ready to be fully, you know, fully hit the panic button just yet. We'll see what happens when they turn around after the All-Star break. But Matt, I want to get to our segment of the week. We didn't get to do it last week because we had a guest on. So I figure this is a pretty good week. I've got a couple in mind for Bulls history. I want you to start off, though, our segment of Bulls history for us.
All right. This one we are throwing back to 1989. February 16, 1989, the Bulls beat the Milwaukee Bucks 117-116. The Bucks were a good team that year. Coming into this game, they were 31-15, and the Bulls were 27-20. The Bucks got 26 points from Jack Sikma. Yeah, that's right. Who? 20 from Terry Cummings, 24 from Larry Christkowiak. Who the hell are these Milwaukee Bucks that were 31-15 coming into this game?
Little brother Milwaukee.
But this game was excellent. The Bulls won it in dramatic fashion. They were actually down 12 in the fourth quarter. MJ scored 27 of his game-high 50 in the fourth quarter. Also grabbed 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and had 3 steals. Horace chipped in with 18. Scotty was 17. Cartwright had 11. And the Bulls come back to win this one. MJ also had, after the Bulls get a steal of Milwaukee's last possession, MJ went coast to coast, including some behind the back fancy dribbling, and drilled a pull up J with 1 second left for the win. We already put up the video highlights of that game on our Twitter feed at Locked On Bulls, so you should check those out. They are great. Some pretty great audio there at the end from Johnny Red Kerr. After MJ hit that game winner. Really fun stuff.
So I'm going to stay right there in the Michael Jordan era, and I'm going to February 18th, 1996. This is actually one of the better games and one of the more historic games for the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls entered the night at 45-5, playing the Indiana Pacers, who were actually relatively good that year. This was a Reggie Miller, Mark Jackson type team here. This is actually historic, though, because this is the 9th time in NBA history that two players on any team in the NBA scored 40 or more points, and had it had me jump down a rabbit hole, because Michael Jordan scored 44 in this game. Scottie Pippen had 40, and Dennis Rodman had 23 rebounds in this game. But it got me curious about how many players and what were the best scoring duos in one single game ever. Matt, I don't know if you can think about it, but over the since 1985-1986, there's been 200 most potent scoring duos, and this is thanks to our friends over at Sports Reference. What do you think the number one game in terms of duos is across the league? Out of 200 different duos that there are since 1985-86, who scored the most total points, and what was the most evident one that you can think of?
I mean, like, my instincts would be to say a game when Steph and Klay both went off and did Splash Brothers stuff. And, you know, and they each dropped like, you know, one of them dropped 50 and one of them dropped 45 or something like that. But I see, I don't know. I'm thinking like it might secretly be some like crazy, like, and that was like my second thought was maybe like a Stockton Malone game, but Stockton was never pouring in a whole bunch of points. Like he had some games where he would get hot from downtown, but really it was all about racking up those assists to Malone. So I think I would back off of making that my guess. Kobe and Shaq, maybe that would be like, that's another duo that would come to mind where I wouldn't be surprised if they had a game where like they both dropped 50. Yeah, you know what? That's probably my guess. I'm going to give two guesses, one of which is Kobe and Shaq, and the other one would be
unfortunately,
Steph and Clay.
This only dates back to 2013, 2014, so I don't have... I'm assuming Clay and Steph are on here. I didn't go and dig through all the game logs or anything, but this is 2013, 2014, so that might have changed it a little bit, but you were close. Actually, Kobe Bryant's 81-point game... including Smush Parker's 13 points.
Oh, right, against Toronto.
Was the number one. It was 94 total points. Kobe Bryant actually is the first and second most.
Oh, that's so lame. I mean, I was trying to think of game like, you know, dynamic duos where they're both capable of dropping 40-plus, like MJ and Scotty, and it's like, oh, no, it's Kobe Bryant dropping 81, and then whichever other Laker managed to score a few buckets. I hate that. That's
well,
stupid.
Kobe Bryant's second game on this, actually, is Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol back in 2009, where Kobe dropped 61 and Pau had 31. Kevin Durant, 51, and Russell Westbrook's 40 on February 19th. Actually,
oh, yeah, of course. There's another...
actually,
great
of
duo.
This week, 2012, Kevin Durant had 51 and Russell Westbrook had 40. But so the reason why I bring this up is because actually this game with Michael and Scotty are a part of the top 20 all time in terms of scoring points. And like I said, there only had been nine duos that had scored 40 or more in a game. That's up to 14 now, but this one ranks number 17 out of the top 200. Guess how many times Michael is in the top 25 of this scoring duo, him and Scottie Pippen, or Michael and complimented by somebody else.
How many times is MJ on that list, whether it be Scottie or a different role player contributing
in the top 25?
In the top 20. I'll guess nine times.
He's in it seven, actually. And if I probably scrolled down through the top 200, man, he's on this list a lot. The one that surprised me the most is actually the fifth highest one among these rankings. Like I said, this is only going back to 2013, 2014. So we don't include Clay and Steph and maybe a game that James Harden had some kind of crazy, ridiculous score. But even at those points, I feel like a lot of those games end up to be like a combination of 60 or 70 points. But this one surprised me a ton. Gilbert Arenas is actually on here twice in the top 10. He dropped...
So it was a game with him and MJ when they were both playing for the Wiz?
No, it was actually Caron Butler. So Caron Butler and Gilbert Arenas twice. Gilbert Arenas dropped 54 on Phoenix in 2006. Caron Butler added 34 to that. And then in 2006, actually these happened... it's happened 5 days apart from each other. So Gilbert Arenas dropped 60 on December 17, 2006, and then followed that up with a 54-point performance against Phoenix. And then in Caron Butler's situation, he had 27 and then 34. So that duo, I mean, I think for a little bit there at least, and maybe even a week, maybe Wizards fans were thinking that they had something special. Obviously, it didn't turn out that way. But I thought this was unique because Michael and Scotty, you just think about them as the two duos and the importance that they both brought in, not only Michael being able to score at will, but Scotty also contributing too and being a Hall of Fame Robin to their Batman. So that's mine, February 18th, 1996.
Actually, the other one I had is just a few days earlier than that game you have with the Bulls and the Pacers. This one is Bulls beating the Detroit Pistons in overtime, 112-109, on February 15th, 1996. A really excellent effort and a well-rounded game from the Bulls in this one. MJ had 32, Scotty a double-double with 20 and 13. Rodman had only 19 rebounds in this one, so not quite 23 the few days later. But get this, 14 of Rodman's 19 rebounds were offensive. God, I miss his offensive rebounding. God, it was a player, including a tip-in that an offensive rebound and a tip-in brought the Bulls even at the end of regulation to send it to OT because the Bulls actually almost coughed up their big fourth quarter lead. Grant Hill and Joe Dumars led a pretty crazy fast comeback for the Pistons late in the fourth quarter, and they were led by Allen Houston dropping 27 points. He played 50 minutes in that game. Highlights for that one are also up on our Twitter page right now. And Stevie Kerr, current Golden State Warriors head coach, had 17 points off the bench, and Kukoc with 19 points off the bench. Kukoc also hit a big three-pointer late in regulation and a three-pointer in OT to help the Bulls ice that win over Detroit on February 15th, 1996.
So I got one more here. February 11th, 2007. So this is kind of like a weird age of Bulls history.
Like between the baby Bulls and the Rose Bowl.
Oh, yes. And I had to laugh because of some of the names on this roster for the Bulls. But they were going up against the Phoenix Suns going on the road. They were 38-12, the Phoenix Suns, where the Bulls were coming in at 28-23. The Bulls were actually... they actually capitalized in this game. And the thing about this game that made it special was not only being able to pull out a win against a Phoenix team who only had 11 losses coming into this game late into the season, but they dropped 37 in the fourth quarter and beat the Phoenix Sun 116-103. This game was especially unique, not only because Luol Deng dropped 29, Kirk Heinrich dropped 29, Ben Gordon dropped 27, Chris Duhon came off the bench and had 11 to complement that, but this was a game in which two guys on this team that were supposed to be highly touted, one was highly paid by the Bulls. Can you name that guy that was highly paid by the Bulls in 2007 to come in here and he laid an absolute egg?
Oh, that has to be Ben Wallace.
It is indeed. Ben Wallace had 5 points in this game, 10 rebounds. And then the other that was a huge disappointment in one of those draft night blunders.
Tyrus Thomas.
And Tyrus Thomas. So the starting five for the Bulls was Luol Deng, Kirk Heinrich, Ben Gordon, Ben Wallace, and Tyrus Thomas. But the Bulls went on the road, beat up a pretty solid Phoenix Suns team. This was back in the era of Sean Marion and Amari Stoudemire.
Amari, like young Amari.
But,
yeah.
But this was actually Luol Deng's, and the surprising thing is this is Luol Deng's best season in 2006-2007. It was only his third year in the league, and he actually averaged the highest points per game, and he was sort of that leader on the Bulls early on before sort of the baby Bulls came on, Derrick Rose coming on a season later. So this was an interesting game, an exciting season. This is kind of like the forgotten years of the Bulls, but the scrappy nonetheless, your favorites in Luol Deng and Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon.
You mentioned Luol had a game-high 29. Luol Deng played 46 minutes and 55 seconds in that game. And that game did not go to overtime. Luol played 47 of 48 minutes in that game, and Tibbs wasn't even a coach yet. That is nuts. That is absolutely nuts. I don't know what's crazier, that or Kirk Heinrich scoring 29 points.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy in a game where, and even in the era where 3-point shooting wasn't the biggest, and Kirk Heinrich had five of seven from the 3-point line. Bulls didn't have a whole lot of 3-point shooting outside of Ben Gordon and Kirk Heinrich, but this was in fact a big night for Kirk Heinrich. And I had to go back because I was wondering how what was the season high for in terms of points per game for Luol Deng. So what was the highest amount that he had scored in a single game? It was actually twice against Portland. He dropped 40 against Portland and 35 against Portland. But I was curious because Luol Deng went on this streak for about 6 weeks where he was coming out and dropping anywhere between 25 and 35 points on every night. And like, he followed this game up with a 31-point performance and a 33-point performance. So pretty interesting as a Bulls team was 29-23 at this time.
Crazy to think where Luol is now. I mean, when the Bulls were playing the Lakers recently, I can't remember which member of the Bulls media he was talking to, but talking about the fact that he's essentially just been healthy but inactive after signing that huge contract with the Lakers in the summer of 2016 when guys got contracts that they clearly weren't worth. And I think Luol was always a underappreciated guy in Chicago, obviously the workhorse, Tibbs was furious when the Bulls traded him away because he was obviously a guy that Tibbs rode pretty hard, and not just the fact that he played big minutes, but he always thought of Luol as a glue guy on both ends of the floor. Anytime the Bulls needed a bucket, he could get him a bucket or make a big defensive play. He did that too. And you hope that, you know, maybe Luol finds himself a role as, you know, a veteran bench guy on a contender at some point, because just, you know, wallowing around on a bloated contract and not getting to play for an irrelevant Lakers team would be a pretty sad way for his career to end.
Yeah, and you think about it now too, like, not the fact that you brought this up, it kind of reminded me of Luol Deng, like thinking about players that Tom Thibodeau kind of drove into the ground in terms of guys that he got the most out of and where they're at right now. Like, I think about Joakim Noah. I think about Derrick Rose. I think about Luol Deng. I think about some of the other guys that were even role players in this team, that whether or not they're even in the league anymore. It's interesting to think about that in that capacity, about how much Tom Thibodeau actually squeezed out of all these guys, and after that result, and maybe that'll be some questions that Timberwolves fans will have over the course of the next few years. Like, obviously, guys are in way better shape. There's technology that's insane to keep guys healthy and in shape, but playing those types of nights, you know, look at what it's done to some of these guys, and it's pretty crazy. Obviously, Luol Deng, Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose, all players that were important to the Bulls' run. But it's just interesting to see and to look at some of those former Bulls over that stretch of 4 or 5 years and where they are now, because a lot of them aren't really playing at a high level anymore.
All right, well, we got to stop talking about Tibbs and playing big minutes of those old Bulls teams, because if C. Red Fred's listening, we're going to give him an aneurysm.
All right, quickly before we get out of here, I have to mention this, because one of our friends, our writers at LockedOnBulls.com, and Austin Hutchinson, he tweeted out something that was relatively important back when Butler was traded and the tank was on officially, and the Bulls had made a quick move to try to revamp this roster. So I went back and forth with him a lot this summer about where I thought the Bulls were going to be. He was one of the people that called me absolutely nuts, who I said, you know, I don't think this team's going to be as bad as you're thinking they are. So he went out and tweeted and said that if the Bulls win 20 games this season, I will eat this tweet live on Periscope. So obviously the Bulls winning their 20th game of the season last year, Austin went on Periscope and followed up his bet. And it's been circulating Twitter a lot over the last 12, 14 hours or so. But I got to give Austin a shout out for that, because he followed up on his bet. And I told him, I said, you know, there's projections out there that the Bulls are going to win 25 to 28 games, and with the roster that was constructed at least at that time, told him, you know, the Bulls aren't going to be that bad. They're not going to lose. They're not going to win 18 games in a season. So shout out to Austin, though, great writer, and he follows up on his bets, so he's true to his bets if you're a betting man.
Yeah, I had to give him mad respect for the fact that he actually followed through on that. I watched the video this morning. And you just feel so bad for him as he's, and like, there are all these people commenting on Periscope, like, hurry up and eat it already. Like, stuff it in your face. It's like, oh man, this guy's just, he's taking one for the team. He's owning up to a bet that he made with himself. And, it was funny. I do not envy him. I've definitely eaten some paper at some point in my life, but a full sheet like that all crumpled up, at some point you just got to feel like you're just chewing on a wet sock. I mean, that could not have been fun. And
he said he couldn't even get it down.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I absolutely don't doubt it.
What's the worst thing you've ever eaten for a bet or drank?
Or orange flavored liquid soap. I took a shot of that back in my college years.
Oh.
On just a bet or a dare or something.
Look at you getting out and ahead of the Tide Pod,
yeah,
sensation.
Yeah, man, I was ahead of my time. What can I say? Also, the spoonful of cinnamon challenge, I've done that. I don't know if you have, but it is not fun, where you just try to eat a whole spoonful of just, you know, powdered cinnamon.
That looks torturous.
It's terrible. It is worse than it looks. Yeah, so yeah, I've done my fair share of eating stupid shit. You know, nothing crazy like an Eagles fan, where I'm actually eating literal feces. Never done that. I have a little bit I have just enough self-respect and pride to not go that far. But yeah, credit to Austin for owning up to it, because I take pride in owning up when I lose bets, and I feel like that's something that everybody should do.
So, oh, absolutely. I think the worst thing that I ever drank or eaten for a bet, or somebody was going to pay me something, think about a Costco size jar of pickles, no pickles in it, just straight juice. And it maybe was probably about 25, 28 ounces of pickle juice. And I had to drink it in 5 minutes for $20. Oh. You know I did. You easily know I did. But that was probably the worst experience of my entire life. I was sweating. My mouth tasted like ass. It was the worst experience of all time. It almost ruined pickles for me.
Ooh, that's pretty bad. Oh, another one I did. So you know how... I think it's Papa John's, back when I was a poor college student and actually willing to eat that crap. They give you like the liquid garlic butter pouches.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
With the pizza, they give you two of them. That was another one I did on a dare in college, is I downed those back to back like a shot. I just took the liquid garlic butter and just downed it like a shot.
You're going to make me puke all over my mic.
It was really gross.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We'll be back tomorrow for Mailbag, and so make sure you get all of your questions in, whether it's on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, or at our Gmail account at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. Send your questions in. We'll spend a good amount of time answering those tomorrow, as well as previewing the Toronto Raptors game tomorrow night, and so much more. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Bye! Oh, stop it, Samson!
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.